Oh, look at that. Oh, baby wants to pinch them. What's the matter? Give them back. What's the matter? Just a little red, that's all. Let me feel. Come here.
Hey, leave her alone.
Let's see. That's either Harvey Keitel in Bad Lieutenant or Dennis Hopper, one of those Hollywood perverts. But I'm an actor, so I guess I'm one too. But those were two great films, Blue Velvet and Bad Lieutenant. But it's 6 p.m., and we're going to start the Friday 6 p.m. news, Kill Radio News with Hassan. And it's going to be a totally pre-recorded show, some stuff I blatantly stole from another radio station on my home recording system. It's all analog, cassette, old school, here at killradio.org, internet only. Call us, 213-252-0998. We're going to listen to my brother from Atlanta, who comes on Air America every night, who's totally out of his mind, Mike Malloy. And then we're going to listen to my AM sister, Stephanie Miller, the drive-by girl on Air America. And then we're going to hear Lawrence Wilkerson, who was the special assistant to Colin Powell. Lawrence Wilkerson is now a dove. He's not a hawk. And he says some interesting things in a great interview with Ed Schultz. It's going to be a total Kill Radio show. Kill Radio Air America show today. And I'm Hassan, the 6 p.m. Friday news. Hot, muggy, Friday before Memorial Day 2006, kicking off summer. And believe me, it's going to get harder. But luckily, our DJ Chicken Leather put a ceiling fan here in Kill Radio. We're in the heart of Hollywood on the 24th floor of the beautiful Arco Tower overlooking the Hollywood Freeway, Kill Radio, Los Angeles. Some interesting things happened this week I want to tell you about before we go into the pre-recorded portion of the news. Mary Wilson of the Supremes had a heart attack two weeks ago, in Las Vegas. I grew up listening to Mary Wilson. I love the Supremes. And I think she's due to go into surgery today for triple bypass surgery. So let's all say a prayer for her. The great dance instructor, Catherine Dunham, died this week. A lot of talent has come through her. A little local news here in L.A., the L.A. high schools, thank God I'm not in high school because I was not an A student or a B student or even a C-plus student, but I was hovering a little lower. They're making these really tough exams now for kids here in the L.A. school system, and they have to pass this exam to graduate. That's just for the better. It'll make them a better citizen. It'll make America safer, I guess, a little safer. Did I die there for a little while? You know, there's no engineer here at Kill Radio. But they put this test in place, and there were some pictures in the L.A. Times today of L.A. students, seniors, who were not going to graduate, and I know that feeling. Luckily, I graduated, and I didn't even have to go to summer school that year. I didn't graduate with honors like my brainiac sisters, but I graduated from high school in Pennsylvania a long time ago. But anyway, they put this exam in place here in California, in L.A. County. And a lot of people are not going to graduate this weekend or next weekend. They have to wait another semester, and that can be embarrassing. It can hold up your college career, which is really important to a lot of people. I'm just glad these kids are not dropping out. They're going to stick it out and do another term or whatever. So, you know, from Kill Radio, cheers to all you kids who are going to stick it out and do another year. I was held back a couple years, but I graduated. Because you can't even get a job at McDonald's if you're a high school dropout. Believe me, you can't. You can't even, yeah. So anyway, I don't want to depress those kids if they're listening. So what else happened this week? Enron. Kenny Boyle is going to jail. He's going to go to a country club for about 2 years. He's going to go to a country club, get his backhand in shape. And I doubt if those poor people in Texas will ever get their money back. My heart goes out to them, you know. I was talking to a friend at work, and me and him kind of disagreed. I said, well, at least a lot of those people weren't elderly. There was a lot of scams in this country to get money from elderly people. He said it really didn't matter whether they were young or old, but I'm just glad they weren't, like, elderly people. I hate to see babies and elderly people suffering because they're so innocent. All those people in between, who gives a hell? So anyway, Kenny Boy Lay, it looks like, you know, they say he can get 80 years, but, I mean, let's be real, people. Do you think one of George Bush's biggest contributors in the state of Texas by a Texas judge is going to get 80 years? God bless, I love the jury, but believe me, Ken Lay will not get 80 years. Remember, there's like 8 different justice systems in this country. One for all types of different people. If you're a woman or if you're a man, if you're poor, if you're rich, if you're black, if you're white, you know, there's about 6 or 7 different justice systems in this country. So let's go into some pre-recorded stuff. We're going to go into Crazy Mike Malloy from Atlanta, Georgia. Then we're going to go into a great interview with Ed Schultz and Lawrence Wilkerson, special assistant to Colin Powell, during the build-up to the Iraqi war. And then we're going to end it with my homegirl, Stephanie Miller, talking to John Kerry, who I like and I want to see run again. Okay, let me quit gabbing. Okay, here we go. Get this old analog cassette going here. And a 1 and a 2.
This kid, whoever this kid was that asked this question, all right, I'm sure it's somebody in their 20s. I shouldn't call him a kid. But whoever this young person was that asked this question has got to have a fantastic sense of humor, right? Very droll. Your presidency has been a rather polarizing period in America. Woo! And occasionally your attitude towards protesters and dissenters has been perceived as being dismissive. And occasionally, then, cavalier. And I'm wondering how you feel that's contributed to the polarization in politics today, and if that approach will change, given that you have, cough, cough, fallen somewhat in the polls.
I hear voices of discontent, and while ago at a press conference, I remember uttering, you know, one wonderful piece of wisdom is like a dog chasing his tail. It actually didn't fly that good, but nevertheless, my point. But thank you. It's a legitimate question. And so to answer your question, yeah, I hear the protests, and I can understand why. I can understand why people are concerned about war.
Really?
Nobody likes war.
Except you.
Particularly me.
That's what I just said.
I knew exactly what was going to happen when I committed these troops into harm's way. I knew there would be people would lose their life. I knew I'd be trying to comfort mothers and fathers and grieving wives. I knew exactly what was coming, and if I didn't think it was the right thing to do, I wouldn't have sent them. And if I didn't think we could succeed in Iraq, I'd pull them out.
Now, oh, Jesus. Hold on. Whoa, stop, back up. Just a second here, Mr. President. Nobody likes war, particularly me. You have been lusting after war. You're a war lover the same way Ann Coulter likes to drink huge, brimming glasses of warm, frothy blood. So you say to this student, you knew exactly what was going to happen. You knew the chaos that you were going to create, and you did it anyway? You say you knew people would lose their life. That's your way of saying lose their lives. But what? So which time are you lying? Are you lying now? Or are you lying when you sat with Tony Blair before the invasion and said you didn't think there'd be loss of life? You thought it'd be a cakewalk. So are you lying then? Are you lying now? And you knew you'd be trying to comfort mothers and fathers and grieving wives. When? One brave student actually asked about Bush's admitted treasonous crime of leaking classified information for political revenge. I wonder if this student has been renditioned yet. The student says, my question, sir, is, as you're aware, we have many students here who are currently working for or considering working for the State Department, the various intelligence agencies and such. And how do you respond to the recent report by Prosecutor Fitzgerald that there is, in his words, a concerted, quote, evidence of a concerted effort by the White House to punish Joseph Wilson, end quote, who himself has a distinguished record of government service?
This is, there's an ongoing legal proceeding which precludes me from talking a lot about the case.
But what's your
name?
There's
also an ongoing investigation.
Oh, yeah?
It's a serious investigation.
You little commie.
I will say this, that after we liberated Iraq...
What?
There was questions in people's minds about, you know, about the basis on which I made statements. I was going into Iraq. And so I decided to declassify the NIE for a reason.
A political revenge.
I wanted to see people to see what some of those statements were based on.
Lies.
That's what I wanted to see. I wanted people to see the truth.
Oh.
And thought it made sense for people to see the truth. And that's why I declassified the document. You can't talk about, you're not supposed to talk about classified information. And so I declassified the document.
Yeah, 10 days after you leaked it. Oh, never mind. Get that little commie's name. That kid over there in the corner. The one with the button-down collar. That son of a bitch is going to Gitmo. We're almost done with the moron sounds for the evening. This one is particularly vexing. When you're fighting an enemy that actually speaks out loud and has desires, you can't be placid because there's an ideology of bubbles or something. You listen to his answer and see if you can figure it out. Here's the question. Sir, I have a more general question about the United States' work to democratize the rest of the world. Many have viewed the United States' efforts to democratize the world, especially nations in the Middle East, as an imposition or invasion on their sovereign rights. I'm wondering, how might your recently formed Iraq study group under the U.S. Institute for Peace forge a new relationship with Iraqis and educate Americans about the democratic and peaceful principles inherent in Islam?
We've got to be realistic about what's possible.
Why start now?
But we've got to be firm in our belief that freedom is possible and necessary. Otherwise, I repeat to you, a system that says, okay, let's just tolerate the tyrant so long as everything seems okay, didn't work. That's one of the lessons of the attack on the United States. You know, the world seemed fine, didn't it? It seemed kind of placid. There was a bubble here, a bubble there, but everything seemed all right. And yet, beneath the surface, there was tremendous resentment. And it's now come to full. And so how do you defeat their idea? Now, if you don't think they have a ideology, you know, or a point of view and or a strategy to impose it, then I can understand why you think the United States ought not to be as active as we are. But I believe differently. I believe they're bound. These folks are bound by an ideology. I know that they have got desires. They say it. This is a war in which the enemy actually speaks out loud. You heard the letter I wrote. I read from Zane speak out loud on this one. But nevertheless, we got to take their words seriously.
What?
When the enemy speaks, it makes sense for our military, our intelligence, the president to take the words seriously. So we can adapt and adjust. Anyway, very interesting question. Thanks for bringing that to my attention.
Oh, please kill me. Kill me now, please. His explanation of Social Security made more sense than this. What the hell did he just say? He started out by saying we got to be realistic about what's possible. Why start now, fantasy?
Retired Colonel Lawrence is a former chief of staff of Secretary of State Colin Powell between 2002 and 2005, and those were, needless to say, some pretty interesting years. Colonel Ed Schultz, good to have you on the program, sir.
Ed, good to be on.
You were one of the first, if not the first, to describe the White House as a cabal. That certainly caught my attention, and many others for that matter. What did you mean when you said that?
Well, some people have criticized me for putting the word back in the dictionary. I said, look in there. It's been in there all along. I simply meant that, as has happened in the past with other presidencies, especially since World War II, decisions were made offline, so to speak. They were made outside the statutory process. They were made by a small group of people, and not necessarily with the president witting of those decisions.
Yeah, pick your subject at this point. A lot of talk about Rumsfeld. What's your take on that? You think he should go? And just all the criticism that's surrounding him.
Well, I think there are two things that ought to happen here. One of them is a really good option, and the other one is the next best option. The first one is that the man who has said a number of times that he cares genuinely about the armed forces of the United States and about America should step down. I don't care whether he's innocent of every charge. I don't care whether he is absolutely guiltless. I don't think that's the case. But in this set of circumstances where he is a lightning rod for this administration, he should step down. And if he's a genuine patriot, he ought to know that. The second option would be that if he won't do that, the president should fire him and do it however he wants to. Give him a Medal of Freedom afterwards, whatever. I don't care. My armed forces are being hurt. He needs to be out of there.
What about the culture of this story, the way it has just taken on a life of its own, the number of high-profile military leaders who are retired but very close to everything that was taking place? Number one, this is somewhat unusual, I think. But also, do you think this pressure is mounting?
I think it is, and it is unusual, except if you go back through our history, you'll find evidence of it before, and I'm not just talking about MacArthur during Truman's time, also the revolt of the admirals during Truman's time, when Truman had so much trouble trying to get the admirals to understand that he wasn't going to spend every penny America had on the defense budget, and back to Abraham Lincoln and General McClellan and so forth. It's happened before. This time, it's a little more disconcerting to me as a student of this history, because it shouldn't be happening. As I said, we should have a man who understands that he's been in the office too long, that he's become a lightning rod for all of the administration's problems, and those problems are just multiplying one right after the other now. He should step down.
Lawrence Wilkerson, Colonel, U.S. Army, retired, former Chief of Staff for Secretary of State Colin Powell, with us here on the Ed Schultz Show. Do you think that this is a microcosm of how the military feels about Rumsfeld? Do you think that there are a lot more that aren't speaking?
I think there are quite a few more that aren't speaking. And let's just examine for a moment the immediate reason that I suspect these people have come out here very recently. They are very much concerned that they're hearing the same kind of rhetoric. They're smelling the same kind of war planning. They're looking at the same kind of procedures that led to the war in Iraq without any real debate, without any real transparency for the American people, this time with regard to Iran. And so I think you're going to see, as long as that continues and the administration doesn't defuse that, as long as they think America might go to war with Iran without any debate, you're going to see more people coming out.
Have you had any discussions with Colin Powell about the Rumsfeld situation?
I have not, no. We still converse with regard to some programs we run for youngsters down in the District of Columbia, tutoring programs, scholarship programs, things like that, but we don't talk too much about substantive issues anymore.
You were the chief of staff for him when he made the presentation to the UN Security Council. That's just not the Colin Powell that America knows. Is that a fair statement?
Well, I think it's a fair statement. I've searched my conscience many a time for that presentation. I was integral to it. I helped prepare it. And the rationalization that I present to myself, right or wrong, is that our intelligence agencies let us down. But I wish I could go back and live it over again. I'd certainly be more aggressive in taking on those intelligence agencies. And in particular, taking on the deputy or the deputy DCI and the DCI, John McLaughlin and George Tenet.
Mm-hmm. You think Tenet? Well, of course, he left and got the Medal of Freedom.
Yep.
Figure that one out.
We say in the military, screw up and move up.
What about Dick Cheney and Scooter Libby? Do you believe that the vice president had Libby leak Valerie Plame's name?
I am so confused over that matter, Ed. I've been following it, as has most of the rest of America, I assume, and I can't figure it out. I don't know what's going on anymore. Fitzgerald undoubtedly is a competent man. He's pursuing this doggedly and aggressively. I just have to wait and see what comes out of it. I know about some of the nefarious ways that that particular office conducted its affairs over the course of the years that I was in the State Department, but about this particular incident, I'm in as big a mystery as everyone else.
Do you believe Karl Rove is as manipulative and as operative as he's made out to be?
Well, I didn't see enough of him. Every now and then I would see him. Every now and then he would talk to us to say. But if he's the political advisor to this administration and his favorite, as I've heard, one of his favorite theorists is Machiavelli, I'd say that in terms of Machiavelli, he takes the worst of him. And incidentally, the other day I caught a quote I hadn't seen from Machiavelli. It said, wars bring out thieves and peace hangs them. That's pretty good.
It is. Lawrence Wilkerson, Colonel, U.S. Army, retired, former Chief of Staff of Secretary of State Colin Powell. Iran, this is different from Iraq because of what this president over there is saying. I mean, when he starts talking about annihilating Israel and he's been so defiant to the world, circumstances here are going to be and seem to be a lot different than that of Iraq. But the will of the American people, they just don't want to see this dog and pony show again, do they?
I don't think so. You know, and we've had plenty of opportunity and indeed could have opportunity again in the future to use diplomacy with Iran. We had an opportunity back in 2003 when, as you'll recall, we had rolled into Baghdad and Tehran was more or less trembling in its boots. I mean, we had overwhelmed Iraq in a matter of weeks. And that was a maximum point of leverage for us. And the Iranians even made overtures to us through other ambassadors. And they let us know that blessed at the very highest level in Iran, which can only mean one man, they were willing to talk about everything from Taliban, Al-Qaeda, Iraq, nuclear weapons program. They were ready to talk about everything. And we essentially turned them down flat.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have very little leverage over them because the real winner in that region right now is Iran. Let's just tick off the things we've done for Iran. We've eliminated their number one enemy, Saddam Hussein. We've eliminated another enemy, the Taliban. They won the elections on 15 December, and they pretty much own the southern part of Iraq right now, including the principal city of Basra. And they have enough operatives in Iraq right now to, if we were to do anything in Iran, they could cause us untold problems in Iraq.
Do you think Colin Powell thinks that we didn't go in there with enough men?
Absolutely. He said it.
And when did he come to that conclusion?
Well, I think he came to that conclusion very early on. I think he made a couple of telephone calls, not wanting to overstep his bounds because he was Secretary of State, after all. He was no longer Chairman of the Joint Chiefs. But I think he recommended to a couple of people who might be wearing uniforms that...
Who did he call?
Well, I think he probably talked to General Franks. I would guess that he did.
And was there a sense of stubbornness with this administration in dealing with their war planning?
Extraordinarily so. But you've seen it in other matters, too. I mean, there's a rectitude there, an almost divine rectitude that says, we're right, you're wrong, shut up, go away. And I'm afraid that they've used that technique on more than one important national security decision, and I think they certainly used it with regard to Iraq, and in particular with regard to post-invasion planning in Iraq, which was just the height of ineptitude.
They've totally screwed that one up. Yep. In fact, there isn't anything that they've been on the mark about.
Well, I said the other day, if I had to use a one-word, if I had to make a one-word description of this administration, it would be inept.
What about the word misled versus the use of the word lied?
Well, that's kind of like President Clinton trying to parse the meaning of the word is. I think the word lied is pretty clear, and I think misled is pretty clear.
Are you on a speaker?
And I think this administration has had a number of points where, were I a historian, an academic as I am now, looking at it, I would want to look real hard and see, as things come out, just exactly how deeply those misleading statements, if you will, or lies, if you will, just how deeply they go.
Do you think we'll ever know?
I think historians have a way in the future, you know, the dispassionate future of digging these things out. I mean, we've found out most of the details, I think, about Watergate and many of the details, if not most, about Iran-Contra. So I think it'll come out in time. Do I think it'll come out before this administration leaves? I wish it would, but I hope not. But I suspect not.
Colonel, let's do it again. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, retired U.S. Army Chief of Staff, Secretary of State Colin Powell, between 2002 and 2005. Stay with us. Your call's coming up. Where America Comes to Talk, The Ed Schultz Show. We're right back.
Two most rational folks at the time ignored his nuttery. Crazy people know non-crazy people don't much like dealing with crazy people, which is why crazy people do crazy things. They never suspect for a moment non-crazy people will suddenly...
People worse, you don't realize how seriously depressed after the 2004. No. And that's before we knew the nightmare that was to... that was to happen in the years...
Well, I understand that. And my
You know, my greatest disappointment was not on a personal level. I mean, obviously, it's disappointing, and I'm not going to kid people. You work that hard, you fight that hard. But the biggest disappointment was for the people that I met around the country who tell me, you know, I don't have any health insurance, and I, or my job just got shipped overseas, or this or that. And you know, I watch what's happening, and a lot of it I predicted. I mean, the Social Security, I said they're going to try to privatize. Energy independence, I said we have to move there, and people... are now seeing what the consequences of not doing that at the pump and so forth. So there's a real frustration that builds up as a result. But
Senator, you don't know how many times I've said that on this very radio show. When all these new generals have come out, I said, gee, who said that about General Shinseki? Oh, I know. It was John Kerry in the 2004 election.
Yeah, you know, the problem is this. There were two great lies out there, and lies can be powerful when you put a lot of money behind them. And one lie was about the war itself. And America's security, and the other lie was about me personally. And I think that now people understand, and I think Katrina and Dubai and Iraq have stripped away any kind of credibility this administration had, so that now people are listening in a way that they weren't perhaps before. So I think that there's a very different climate, a very different atmosphere. People need to take their frustration. You know, that what I'm worried about is that people just turn off the system and say, oh, God, you know, it's Congress, it's the Democrats, it's the Republicans, they're all bad. Folks, we've got some real plans and real answers. And we just laid one of them out today for energy independence. And if people will take those to the ballot box in 2006, yep, we can change the direction of the country.
Oh, I know. I get sick of it, too. Democrats have no ideas. I'm like, people like John Kerry put out ideas every single day. It's just, you know, that becomes the talking point.
Well, it's
point.
The mantra. It's the talking point. That's
yeah.
Right.
Well, you know, and you alluded to it, Senator, but I've always wanted to say personally, thank you so much for your service to our country. And I'm so sorry what they did to you in that election.
Well, you know, we thought we'd done enough to answer it. We did answer it. Some people have this mythology we didn't answer. We did answer. We had all of my crew and the New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, all these papers wrote the truth. The problem is that there was not enough money. We did make the mistake of simply not putting enough money behind that, and we should have. And lesson learned, and it's a very expensive lesson, obviously. But look,
the important thing
is to move on.
Yep.
We've got big choices in front of the country. All of us can go out and make them. We've got great candidates running in 2006, and people have an opportunity to reject what's been going on and to you know, invest in a different future.
Senator, I have to ask you, you're probably too dignified to respond to this, but did you know that they actually erected a bronze statue to honor President Bush's service in Vietnam in a museum in Texas?
No, I didn't know that. Are you serious?
Mm-hmm.
You really?
Yes.
What museum is that? Is that on his ranch?
You know, Senator, I don't know if you know, but my dad ran for vice president with Barry Goldwater in 1964.
I did not know that.
I
remember, yes, indeed, Congressman Miller.
There you go.
That's your dad.
Well, you know,
I
was saying, though, that I don't even recognize this Republican Party from my dad and Barry Goldwater's days. I don't remember people, you know, not calling people unpatriotic or America haters
right.
or troop haters
when
they disagreed.
That's correct. And the fact is that, I grew up with a very different Republican Party around us, and I had great respect for an awful lot of those people, like Senator Hugh Scott from Pennsylvania, Jake Javits from New York. These guys, Jack Hines, my wife's late husband, these were people who reached across the aisle and were moderate and thoughtful, and they represented a very different Republican Party. Now you have this very ideological, very partisan, very right-wing group who I think are bankrupt ideologically. I mean, they really don't have an idea for America. We're running up. I mean, look, if ideas are running the debt of our country up to $9-10 trillion, exporting American jobs and losing our manufacturing base, not funding No Child Left Behind, putting out a disastrous Medicare plan for seniors, then you can run down the list, breaking the law, listening and eavesdropping on Americans, giving the oil companies their energy bill, the bankers their bankruptcy bill, the pharmaceutical companies their prescription drug bill. If those are ideas, then we have really lost our way. But on the other hand, you know, people who say we don't have ideas, I got a simple idea. Tell the American people the truth. That's one idea.
That's an idea they haven't thought of yet.
How about firing all the incompetent people?
Right. Well, you know, Senator, you sound sometimes like you have the same thing I do, and that is Bush administration outrage deficit disorder. I don't know which to focus on first. There's so many things. Let's focus on one. You know, you hear Sean Hannity almost every night going, John Kerry said he had weapons of mass destruction. I mean, what are the American people ever going to get that you guys were not, where you were shown the same cherry-picked, twisted intelligence that they showed everybody?
But more than that, what Sean Hannity doesn't say, obviously, is that I said at the time, in my speech on the floor, exactly what I was voting for. And I didn't vote for what George Bush did. I said, I am voting to give the president the authority to leverage inspections and to make the use of force a last resort as an inspection enforcement mechanism. And I specifically said that as bad as Saddam Hussein is, this vote is not to authorize regime change or the president to go unilaterally. The president broke every pledge he made to Congress. And I regret the vote, not because at the time the facts weren't what they were, but because we trusted a president to keep his word, and he broke it in every single respect. It wasn't the war of last resort. He didn't do the inspections. He didn't build the coalition. He didn't listen to advice. He didn't plan. All of the things he said he'd do, he didn't do.
Senator, having been the target of Karl Rove, certainly in the last election, should he remain out of prison, what do you think his evil master plan will be for 2006?
Honestly, I don't know, but I'll tell you this. It's not going to work, and I think they've used up that card, you know, one too many times. Remember every time...
Yeah, you think? The American people, they've had it with the fear-mongering,
I did something in the 2004 election, they had an orange alert, if you recall. How many orange alerts have there been since the election? I mean, the fact is that they've exploited, and Karl Rove laid out the plan. He's laid it out again, saying the two things they need to go out on are security, the war, and the taxes. I think that's worn thin with the American people, and I think they want real solutions to real problems.
Well, Senator, I know you have important senatorial things to do.
I do? Let me check on that. Do I? No. actually think something's happening around here.
Other than slum around with B-grade radio hosts. But,
I'm having more fun, I'll tell you that.
But I have to ask you something that I know you know is a big concern, you know, of many of our listeners, and that is election fraud. And you know, in whether it's 2006 or 2008, and I defended you, I have to say, a lot on this, because I feel like if we could not prove it, there was nothing you could do. But
There were some people disappointed. Let me just say to any listener who is concerned about that. First of all, we pushed back very hard on Tuesday night when people were pushing for the thing to be called. We thought there were 255,000 provisional ballots out in Ohio. We learned the next morning there were only 155,000 provisional ballots out. The margin at that point was about 120, and everything told, you know, every historical pattern said you won't make up that difference. Now, we did have a full count. We had a complete count of all of those ballots. Every vote was counted. We had two lawsuits. We went to court, and we tried to get access to the machines through the lawsuits, and we were denied that access to the machines. So we fought to get the evidence, and we fought to try to do what we could do. The problem is, much of what they did, believe it or not, is legal. What Ken Blackwell did in putting one machine in one precinct for Democrats and five machines for Republicans, and people waited for 5 to 6 hours. Actually, you know, there's no law that said you couldn't do that specifically. And so what we...
By the way, Senator, they just pushed him to be a guest on my show. They sent me his new book, and I said that I can't read it. It's on the wrong paperweight. And I don't have any room for him on the show. I think the major thing is, Senator Kerry, is if Americans don't have confidence that their vote is going to be counted, that's a big, big problem. I mean, I can't imagine if Democrats owned all the voting machines and, you know what I mean, and there was this kind of stuff going on.
It's a huge deal. It really is a huge deal, and the mainstream media needs to pick up on it more, because here's what did happen in Ohio. You had suppression of votes. You had intimidation of individuals. You had purging of lists prior to the election for reasons that in some cases were not legitimate. And so, you know, there was a lot that went on. We had 35,000 lawyers, the largest field operation in the history of presidential politics for voter protection. We had over 3,000 of them in Ohio alone. We obviously talked to every single one of them. We got the machines out in the morning that were misoperating and so forth. I mean, don't think that if, you know, after fighting for a lifetime for these issues and for 2.5 years to win, that if I thought we had sufficient evidence, I wouldn't have gone to court and
right.
done it. Of course
right.
I would have.
But, Senator, I mean, again, here, aren't we in a catch-22 that how are we ever going to get back in power in 2006 and 2008?
Well, interestingly enough, what's happening now is some of the states are doing what the federal government won't do, which is moving on their own to put in place paper ballot trails and to create greater accountability. And what we need to do, and I'm determined to do this, is heighten the visibility as we go into 2006 on the potential of these problems and be prepared to bring a major court case and or legislative effort in the wake of that. And hopefully we're going to win one house or another.
Right. You know, well, and we hope that you keep fighting for us. And if you take nothing else away from this interview, I want it to be that when you run for president, you will announce it on the Stephanie Miller Show.
that's all you want, huh?
You're getting sleepier, Senator.
When you
announce for president, and I hope you do, it will be on
Stephanie Miller.
Thank you, Senator.
God, I am fully hypnotized.
Senator, it has truly been an honor. Thank you so much for taking time for us.
What did I have to announce?
Senator, you will announce that you will run for president in 2008 on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Take care.
All right, you too, Senator. God bless you too, Senator Kerry.
All right. He laughed at my joke about the paperweight.
Yay!
Of course, he didn't know it was my joke. No.
Oh, I told it, didn't I?
Hey, buddy, let me see. Can you hear me out there? We have no engineer at Kill Radio. We engineer our own show. That was three interesting things that I stole from another radio station here in Los Angeles. My trusty home stereo. Portable stereo? Oh, I'm peeking here on a VU meter in the Kill Radio studios in Los Angeles. Call us, 213-252-0998. Or email me at HassanJ53@Yahoo, okay? That's Hassan with two S's, S like in Sam, HassanJ53@Yahoo.com. I'll try and repeat that again before we go off the air. But this, I think this is going to be the last time I talk because the great Xenophone comes on the air at 7 o'clock, and he's usually here every week. But, yeah, email me at HassanJ53@Yahoo.com. Tell me how you like the show. We're going to go into some Art LeBeau oldies, and then we're going to go into my brother in Philadelphia, my home state, Mumia Abu-Jamal. We're on his producer's mailing list. We get all the good stuff. Support Mumia. Give money to that movement. They're up in the Bay Area. But, oh, yeah, I know what I was going to say. I'm having a senior moment here. Listen to my show on Monday night, Straight Ahead Jazz. I have a lot of great stuff on the archives. I have a great Nina Simone show. So listen to me. That's every Monday night at midnight here at Kill Radio when I stretch out. And if I don't have to go to work the next day, I'll just hang out. We'll hang out all night and have a little party here at killradio.org in Los Angeles. So let's go into Mr. Art LeBeau with some oldies for all you people my age, which I know is half of the audience. and we're going to go into Art LeBeau with the oldies, the Motown stuff. And let's again, let's send out a prayer to Mary Wilson of the Supremes. She had a heart attack last week, and she's getting triple bypass surgery, I think, as we speak or yesterday. So let's say a prayer to the Most High for her. Sister Mary from Detroit brought me a lot of good times in my youth listening to Motown. So let's go into, I'm sorry, I'm talking too much, you guys. Let's turn on Mumia. I guess I'm excited. It's going to be a long weekend here in Los Angeles. It's the Memorial Day weekend starting right now. And this is 2006. This is Friday, kicking off Memorial Day weekend on a balmy Friday here in Los Angeles. No, we're not going to go into Art LeBeau. I'm sorry. We're going to go into Barry White, another oldie, Brother Barry, who's not with us no more. So let's listen to some Barry White, and then we're going to go into Mumia Abu-Jamal talking his spiel. He He's on death row in Pennsylvania for a crime he did not do. And then I'm going to sign out of here, okay? This is Hassan saying have a good, safe, insane holiday weekend here at killradio.org. And call us, 213-252-0998. With the maestro, Barry White, in the background. Let me see. Where you at? There you go, Barry. Now, everybody, tell the truth. What news station in the United States is going to play Barry White? Okay, what news show on NBC or your local Eyewitness News are you going to hear Barry White? Okay, he was a South Central. He was one of the OGs in South Central. He was a Crip when he was a kid. He was a gangbanger. Not that that's anything to be proud of, and he overcame it, and went on to entertain kings and queens. He wrote for and started a whole orchestra. But anyway, this is Barry White. Barry White in the background. Here he comes right now. And only on the Kill Radio News will you hear Barry White. Oh, and if you're in Los Angeles, this is really important. If you're listening in Los Angeles, because we have an international audience, killradio.org is having a fundraiser this Sunday night. This Saturday night. I want to get it right. It's this Saturday night at Safari Sands in Los Angeles. On the Sunset Strip, you guys, the famous Sunset Boulevard, 5214 Sunset Boulevard, go to the Kill Radio website. Go to the Kill Radio website, and you'll see the flyer, okay? And it is this Sunday. I'm sorry, this Sunday, May 28th. It's this Sunday. So I got 2 days to go out and do some flyering here in Los Angeles. We need money at Kill Radio to buy more equipment. I hope I'm not talking too fast. We need money. Support us. We need your support. Tell your rich friends to give a lot of money. Come to our fundraiser this Sunday night. Oh, let me tell you what it is. It's called Cyber Sex Cabaret. You see men walking around in lingerie. The handsome, hunky Kill Radio DJ. You'll see us all in lingerie. Well, I don't know about me, but some of the younger guys, you don't want to see me in lingerie. Because I'm in my early 50s. But you'll see some of the younger guys in lingerie, and we're raising money for Kill Radio this Sunday at Safari Sam's in Hollywood on Sunset Boulevard, the famous Sunset Strip. Okay, so let's go into Barry White right now. Hearing? There's no engineer at Kill Radio. And my name is Hassan. If I did, in all that shouting, I forgot to tell you my name. It's Hassan.
What am I supposed to do now? You're going. I know you're going. You're leaving me, baby. I know I can tell. What did I do? What did I say? Why are you doing this? Baby, I love you. My life is nothing without you. Before, we were so happy together, so much together, so... I'm not lying. I'm totally mixed up. Baby, I'm so damn mixed up. I just can't figure out what went wrong. Won't you give us a chance? Won't you think it over? Baby, please. Won't you change your mind? Yesterday I felt so good inside. The joy you gave, the love we made, fulfilled my life. Today I'm alone without you, dear. There's no life here, I can't go on. You're all that I'm thinking of. I just can't forget the way it was. Happy times were yours and mine. Now misery's all I see. Don't let it be, oh darling, please. Yet I remain in love with you. I still feel the same. Bring back my yesterday. Bring back the love you took away. Away. Oh, yeah.
not every day, that you can find something in your life that is worth all the money in this world. Happiness. And for the first time in my life, I find it hard for me to express myself or the way I feel. This thing makes me want to scream, makes me want to holler, this makes me want to shout. It makes me want to sing lyrics of love and joy and happiness. And well, just dig this, baby. Dig this. Never thought I'd find someone who blew my mind, girl, like you do. And never thought I'd see the day that it could be so true, yeah. Yes, I found someone, yeah. Someone that I can give my love to and do all the things I've longed to do. Girl, I found her. It's you, it's true. It's true. It's you. Never have I known the kind of love you've shown in my life. And don't believe myself, you're better than I've ever felt. Yes, I know why. It's all because I found someone, yeah. Someone that I needed so bad. You're nothing like the other I've had. Heavenly Father, I'm so glad it's true. Honey, it's you. Your smiling face, it means so much.
as journalists to be. Before we discuss the nation's and especially urban America's media, we must define our terms so that it's understood what's being said. When I use the term media, I'm speaking about urban radio, but also other mediums of communications, TV, the newspapers, magazines, CDs, and the like. When we look at the portrayal of Black America through these media, it's impossible to see anything positive, except probably that Black Americans seem to be having an awfully good time. We're dancing, flossing, shaking our hinies, and glorifying pimping. We also seem to be quite wealthy, given all the shiny jewelry we wear. Remember, I speak not of the truth, but of the imagery projected in U.S. and international media. And we must know that there are millions of people, perhaps even billions, who consume these media projections, and because they know little else, believe them to be true. That is the power of media. It is impossible to look at how the media works in the U.S. and not conclude that it is a tool of white supremacy and a weapon in the long war against Black life. When we understand that, we have to ask, how did our people survive such psychic onslaughts over our long history here? The short answer is that many of us did not. But the other side of the coin shows us that many Blacks consume their own media in the form of Black newspapers, Black radio, Black magazines, and Black books. For entertainment, we appeared so rarely on TV that for several decades, Black movie companies produced race movies, which were shown all across Black America, showing us as competent, wholesome, and feeling human beings. The Black filmmaker, Oscar Michaud, put together some remarkable work, and surely these images saved many a Black soul huddled in the dark on some segregated balcony in a movie house in the South. That was then. This is now. In the years since the apparent victories of the U.S. Civil Rights Movement, we have seen the loss of Black institutions of all kinds, not just media, under the aegis of integration. Black movies, while well beyond the technical skills and costs of Michaud, are largely comedy ventures or poorly written gangster flicks. Black radio stations have been purchased by larger corporations, and many Black newspapers have ceased publishing. By percentile, more Blacks consume TV and movies than any other demographic in the U.S. Daily TV is a toxic sludge of stereotypes, silliness, and a race to the lowest common denominator. There is a lower percentage of Black journalists working on dailies than 10 years ago. Back in the 60s, Canadian communication researcher Marshall McLuhan coined the phrase, "The media is the message." His work got people thinking about the power of media to shape ideas and ways of seeing the world. If the media is the message, and white corporate media has bought out or overwhelmed most Black mediums of information, what is the message that they're reflecting to the world? So, if that's the problem, what's the solution, you ask? As the saying goes, once you know the pitfall is there, hopefully you won't fall into it. Don't think that your mere presence as a Black journalist in a predominantly white institution will change them. If possible, and given the fluidity of internet-related businesses, build your own independent business, and if you sell it to someone who shares your vision. When you get into the business, whether in radio or newspaper, don't sell out. Remember, he who owns the business determines the output. Only a corporate-owned media could have suckered millions of Americans into believing that Osama bin Laden and Saddam's Iraq were homies. The media that sold the lies that led to war, chaos, and death could hardly be changed by the addition of a few Blacks on their staffs. Think of it this way. Decades ago, the media was always influenced by corporate and government interests. Today, the media is owned by larger corporate interests, and that is the interest they serve. You can either serve those interests by getting a job at some soulless radio station or some dead-end newspaper, or you can start your own. In short, become the media. Give your people an intelligent, viable alternative to the garbage being spoon-fed to the masses. Tell them the truth. Raise hell. In the tradition of the ancestors, speak truth to power. Make a difference by being different. I wish you every success. On the move. Long live John Africa. From Death Row, this is your brother, Mumia Abu-Jamal.
commentaries are produced by Noel Hanrahan for Prison Radio.